Civic City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting for September 12, 2023 is called to order. It's a virtual and by Microsoft Teams an in-person meeting. We are meeting at the Kiawanda Community Center, Faye Gentry Room. And we'll go over the rules of conduct. All cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. You will be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. We'll now call the roll. Director Carlton.
Here.
Director Price.
Here.
Director Strotska.
Here.
Director Gogas.
Here.
And I am the chair, Director Donahue. So we have all five directors here today. The minutes, we have the system development charge methodology hearing. Can you help me here, Rochelle? What are we doing here with this hearing?
You're just approving the minutes from the last meeting.
That was the special meeting.
Oh, the methodology hearing. Yeah. Okay, that's the minutes. Okay. Were there any corrections or additions that need to be added to or deleted from those minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I move the minutes of the August 8th special meeting be approved.
Sorry, I just saw something as I was looking at it. The minutes for the special meeting say that the meeting was adjourned at 6:44. I think the special meeting was adjourned at like 5:02.
Yeah,
5:01.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So just to make that correction. But I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second with corrections. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those in opposed signify by saying nay. Motion carries.
I abstain.
He wasn't there, yeah.
Oh, thank you, Cameron. Okay, for the August 8th, 2023 business meeting minutes, are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion. Director Price?
I'll move that we approve the August 8th, 2023 business meeting minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed signify by saying nay.
And I abstain.
You abstain. Thank you. So the motion carries. The financial report, accounts payable for August 15th and August 31st, 2023. Are there any discussions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion. Director Price?
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for August 15th and August 31st, 2023.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the August 8th, 2023 business meeting minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed signify by saying nay. Were you abstaining?
Yes, because I didn't make it to that part either.
Thank you.
That's
no, that was in the packet. That was in this packet.
Oh.
It wasn't at the previous meeting.
Okay. The general ledger for to date for fiscal year 23-24, is there any discussion? If not, we'll move on to item 5, the manager's report. John?
Thank you, Tom. A couple things I wanted to mention. We have received all these submittals from Earthworks Excavation for the Ripple Avenue Water Pipeline Upgrade Project. There was a little bit of back and forth with that. They had specified a couple of items that were different than what we specified, but we have resolved all those issues. So the submittals by the contractor have all been accepted. We are just waiting for them to begin work. I'm hopeful we're going to have a locate request or something come in soon, because they are supposed to have this job substantially completed by October 28th. And so I did talk to the contractor. They seem to be well aware of of that particular deadline, and have expressed confidence that they will be able to complete the project in time. But it is only 7 weeks away till that deadline. So the impetus is on them. The pressure is on them. They know what their obligation is, and we're just waiting for them to break ground. We were hopeful, obviously, to have this started before now, but they're the only bid that we really received, and our hands are a bit tied waiting for them to complete some of their previous commitments. But should be starting work on that project anytime. I wanted to point out our unaccounted for water again was very good. We're not only are we on the right track, but what I'm relieved about is we're getting consistency, which was something we didn't have for a while. But glad to see the consistency. I feel like it's something that we can, numbers we can rely on, and I think we're doing very well in that regard. Just a couple other small updates. Again, our water rights, both our permit extension and our claim of beneficial use to partially perfect what we can on our permit, both those applications are into the Oregon Department of the Oregon Water Resources Department. This process takes time, government entities and all that. It takes time, but we are expecting both of those to be approved. I will say that we did not receive any, OWRD did not receive any feedback or any comments to the public notification and feedback process. Now, there are two of these that occur. There's one when the application is filed, and then there is another when the department places their final order. So, but we're through 50% of that public comment period with no comments, no objections. So I think that's very good news. Still working with Parametrics as well on the bridge pipeline work we need to do. We had a variety of engineers and material experts come to inspect our pipelines on all three of the bridges in town. The pipelines appear to still have very good useful life, but the hangers for sure have to be replaced. And that's an important part of the seismic resiliency of the pipeline, is those hangers. We know for sure those have to be replaced. There's likely a couple of joints that will also need to be replaced, not because the pipe's in bad shape, but because the mechanical joint is deteriorating. But those still working with Parametrics on that. Still waiting for their list of recommendations, and we should be getting that shortly. That's a project that is a wintertime project, and we're targeting March of next year to have that particular project completed. And other than that, I think that concludes the manager's report, Tom.
John, I had a question concerning the fiber optic cable being laid right up there, or right up today to the bridge. Have we been monitoring, you know, how close is that new fiber optic cable to our water and sewer lines?
Well, on the other side of the bridge.
Yeah.
It's on the south side of the bridge, and our water sewer's on the
And they will not be going any further, my understanding, than the south side of the bridge.
They are going across the bridge.
Oh, they are.
We just got an okay call in. Jeff and Bob are doing that.
Okay, okay. So they will be heading that direction.
Right. They're going to land out by the old motel.
The landing station there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and we'll keep an eye on that activity, because there's a lot of infrastructure buried in the ground where they're at and where they're going.
Yeah, there's three sewer lines and two water lines.
Yeah, yeah. And we've located all those, I'm sure, for them.
Yeah, I just, when I come into town, I've seen marks there.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, that's
all. Are you going to talk about anything also in the Senate report that you got in there that I asked for?
Well, you asked about the, let's see here, old and obsolete equipment, tools. That's under new business, Cameron.
Oh, it was in his manager's report.
Oh, well, I had only just put, the reason I had put it in the manager's report, I put a section about the agenda items just to kind of give the board members an idea of what the agenda item's about before we discuss it. And the only thing I mentioned is that you had requested that it be an agenda item, and I did include, just for reference, now this is a guidance document the state uses for itself. But we thought it might be a handy reference just for comparison on how other government entities handle this type of thing.
And we can discuss that more when we come to it.
And we can discuss that more when we get to the agenda item.
All right. Anybody have any questions for John? Okay, let's move on to unfinished business. The employee handbook harassment policy, we discussed that last month and the month before, I believe. We approved most of the new, or the, what the heck was it? The items that were brought, you had recommended last month. Are there any new recommendations or changes?
Well, no. One thing I did want to mention is we have reinstated that policy that the board adopted several years ago. I have received edit suggestions from two board members. If any of the other board members would like to make additional edit suggestions, if they could do so in the next couple of weeks, I'll try to pull all those edit suggestions into a new draft for board review at the October meeting.
Okay.
I'd like to see on the employee packet that we have an investigation policy, because we don't have one. And this is, we've had a couple issues that we've had with investigation policy seen on some items. So I'd like to see that be in the employee. Since we don't have one, to see that in there.
In the harassment policy, Cameron?
Well, yeah, it would be in that or somewhere off to the side. But I think, yeah, it should be in the harassment policy. Because in a way, we don't have a policies and procedures, how we proceed with an investigation. It's just kind of go by whim of who said what. And I think we have to have a fair
policy instead of one-sided, whatever fits the mode for the day.
Just a second here. I believe there is language for investigations in reference to the Bureau of Labor and Industry procedures. Says the administrative and or judicial remedies available to a prevailing employee with regard to such a claim, including injunctive and appropriate equitable relief. No, that's not it.
I looked, but I couldn't find anything.
Well, there's a reference to, let me see.
Well, to piggyback on what Cameron's saying, I agree with Cameron. You know, that was one of the things I think I sent to you, was the state's model for investigation. And I think that I'd like to see us have an investigation policy as well. And I very much think that we need to have specific language that addresses the unique situation of any kind of complaints that are alleged against a board member and any kind of investigation, and how we would handle an investigation of a board member as opposed to a member of staff.
It does say
that, Sean, that it also needs to have contractors in there, because we do deal with contractors too. So, yeah, it needs to be
as far as
everybody that we deal with the public. You know.
I did find this paragraph here. This policy prohibits harassment, discrimination, retaliation, whether engaged in by a co-worker, supervisor, or manager, elected public official, board member, volunteer, or intern, and anyone else an employee comes into contact with as part of their work with the authority, including contractors, customers, or vendors. Conduct prohibited by these policies is also unacceptable, whether it occurs on or off duty. The authority will not tolerate discrimination or harassment and will promptly investigate and address all reported allegations, including taking any appropriate disciplinary action. So there is an investigation clause there, but you're asking for something a lot more specific as far as how that investigation...
Yeah, how that plays out, the investigate starts, and from the start to the beginning, instead of a whimsical policy of that there is nothing, and I think that it should be spelled out for everyone, including employees, staff, and, you know, even for a contractor coming in. Because really, it's quite vague how the investigation goes. You know, what, why, where, when. And to have an impartial party.
Okay. Any suggestions here, other board members?
I agree. I think we absolutely need to do that because it is vague. It says that we will absolutely investigate, but then it doesn't really outline any particular method for doing the investigation. And you can certainly imagine a scenario where if this is coming from a contractor or a staff member, then there'd be the ability for the authority manager to do an investigation. But if there was, you know, an alleged harassment against a board member, there's no real, you know, there's nothing outlined. There's a real kind of gray area in my mind about how we go about doing that. And I'm not sure that the board or the authority manager is the correct entity to do that. So
you're thinking of someone independent?
Yeah. And so my suggestion would be for us to have some sort of a vote or ordinance isn't the right word, but I think we need to direct John to contact both our legal counsel as well as our HR and come up with some sort of a policy for investigating any kind of workplace harassment claims, and B, get us some advice on how we would conduct an investigation if that complaint were directed
towards a board member.
I agree with that.
Well, I think that's a good idea, especially considering that it's come to my attention that one of our board members contacted one of our employees, Cameron, you know what I'm talking about here, about the tool disbursement. Once again, you're stepping outside of your responsibilities here. And this is the third instance in the last year where you stepped outside your duties and responsibilities. And you're putting me and every other board member here in jeopardy because of your behavior. Now, the way I understand this, correct me if I'm wrong, but you asked one of our employees via voicemail or email to come to your house to discuss the tools that were dispersed last month.
I am not going to comment on my personal life.
Cameron, you contacted one of our employees, and you absolutely can't do that. You know you can't do that.
Once again, I am not going to comment. So,
well, you're putting me and every board member here in jeopardy by doing these things. And I guarantee you, pal, if it comes to a court, a tort case, we get sued.
Nobody was there. Nobody heard the conversation that went on. So, I'm sorry. Move on.
Well, I'm not going to move on. This employee reported it to his supervisor. The supervisor reported it to the manager. And the manager reported it to me. And I notified the other board members. Now,
Let's have a pity party.
John, can you enumerate a little bit of how that came about? Don't name the employee, please.
No, I would. I was informed that Cameron had reached out to one of our employees, requested a meeting, and my understanding was the meeting was to get information about some old and obsolete tools that we had. One in particular that we had donated to a small neighboring water district, and that my understanding is that got Cameron's attention, and he reached out to an employee to try to obtain more information about it. But clearly, he is not supposed to be contacting our employees for anything. As I think we all know, it's okay for any of our employees to contact any of our board members, but the other way around is strictly forbidden. And it's not forbidden just by our policies, it's forbidden by SDAO guidelines for special district board member behavior.
Now, Cameron, I tell you, I know where your heart is on this thing, you know, and I kind of agree with you. You want to find out what's going on with the tools and how they're dispersed. As I went and looked and see if we had any resolutions or policies about how we do that. So I understand where you're coming from here, but you went about it all wrong. You've got to quit doing that.
If
John's case, he brought in the packet what the state guidelines are, and possibly we need to have a resolution to probably follow similar rules, because I went and looked through all our resolutions and we couldn't find anything.
Well, and if a board member has a concern, they should contact me directly. They should not be reaching out to any of our staff for any reason whatsoever.
So we have Resolution 1703, which adopted SDAO guidelines, and Resolution 1801, which specifically stated individual duties and responsibilities of the board, which specifically states that John has total authority on how he operates this business with his employees. The problem here, Cameron, is the tort or insurance laws, which is under Oregon Revised Statute 3-0, which talks about the small districts and tort exceptions, and where individual board members are not responsible for suits except under malfeasance in office or willful or wanton neglect of duty. Ignoring the rules, the laws on contacting and ordering our employees around could possibly come to that malfeasance. Now, I checked with my own lawyer, and he agrees with me. So you've got to stop doing this. I know where your heart is in this thing, as I mentioned, but you've got to do it the right way. You've got to go to John. You can't talk to our individual employees.
He doesn't even return my phone calls. What a waste.
Email. You have it that way, you have a record.
Anyway, let's go on. Because I'm not going to talk about this.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
All right, let's do that. Under unfinished business, was there anything else under the harassment policy that anybody had to talk about?
I think it's important that we, you know, have that. I'd like to see the board direct John to have those conversations with legal and with HR. And I'd like to see us specifically address investigations, specifically address how do we deal with harassment complaints against board members. Specifically, if we think that a board member is acting with malfeasance, how do we deal with the indemnification? Is that something that the board can choose to de-indemnify, or is that something we need legal counsel on, or is that something our insurance decides to do? And I think that we need to have some sort of guidance from our legal as to what steps the board can take. You know, can we do a censure? Can we do some sort of a vote of no confidence? Do we just initiate an investigation? But I'd like us to see the board direct John to do those things.
I agree too.
Does that need a motion, or
do we need a motion, or
to direct John to contact legal, you need a motion.
Is that a motion, what you just said?
I'll try to restate it as a motion if I can. I move that we direct the authority manager to contact legal as well as our HR consultant to get advice on how to, at Cameron's request, which I agree with, to come up with an investigation policy whenever we have a harassment complaint, to come up with a specific investigation policy when a complaint is directed at a board member, to get advice from legal counsel on how we deal with the issue of indemnification when there's potential malfeasance or neglect of duty, and whether or not the board can take action to de-indemnify a board member, or if that is something that happens in another way. Did I wrap that up all right? It's a little wordy.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. Are there any other discussion? All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Unanimous. Carry.
I don't know if it was unanimous. It was 4-0, right?
No.
Cameron
said
aye.
Oh, okay.
He wants that investigation great. Also. Okay. Let's move on to item 7B, which is the mobile generator purchase. John, refresh our memory. Last month, we approved the purchase.
Yes, we brought in three quotes that were all very, very similar in price. At that time, the board approved the mobile generator purchase from Platt Electric. 2 days later, however, we received a late quote that is a dealer direct purchase that is $5,000 cheaper than all, on average, about $5,000 cheaper than all the other quotes we got, including the one we approved last month. If it was only a couple of hundred, I wouldn't have come to the board, but I think that this is a significant cost savings. I regret we did not have this quote sooner. We weren't even sure we were going to get this quote, but it did come through, and it is at such a good price that I think we need to revisit this. My recommendation is that we rescind the motion regarding the purchase that was made at our last business meeting and replace it with a new motion to make the same purchase from this new supplier at this substantially reduced price.
Now, John, this is identical to the one that we wanted to get.
It is.
And the wattage with everything?
It is.
Let's do it.
Where is the local Generac?
Platt was in Newport, correct?
And Warrenton.
And Warrenton.
And where is Generac at?
Eugene and Portland.
Okay, so it's still close. Did we already order the one from Platt?
No, we did not.
I got a question. What about as far as getting service on it? Now, would that be the same people that service our other generators?
Yes.
Well, our annual servicing would be done by the same people that now service all of our generators. We would. This one is to replace that a very old generator. We call it our Detroit.
It is Detroit.
That was the one that was in Vietnam.
That's the one that is vintage 1960s and finally gave up the ghost. Yes, this one will replace that one in our maintenance contract. And if we ever needed additional work, because the servicing, our service contract for these generators is very narrow. They're just servicing them. Any unscheduled repairs or servicing still costs extra. And we have the option to use Cummins, which is the company we use to service them now, or we have the option to go to Platt. They can service it, or we can go probably through the dealers either in Portland or Eugene to have them serviced.
Can't think of the other one's name. It's out of Washington. It's Northwest Generator, I believe it is.
They'd be another option?
That's who we've used. We've used Cummins and Northwest.
Yeah, but I think we've got a lot of options for not only after sales support, I think we've got a lot of options for people that can service this unit.
Do you have a comment, Kathy?
I do. So I don't have, I mean, I would support saving $5,000, of course, but I have concerns about accepting bids that come in late and whether that
this
could.
Is a quote.
Pardon? But it still came in late, did it not?
It did.
Are we required, if asked, to divulge the bids, the quotes that we get? And if we accept one late, does that have the potential to cause us some problems?
Well, if this was a formal bid process, it definitely would.
Okay.
This is an informal bid process, which gives us a lot of latitude. We do not have to pick the low the lowest bid. We do. If we don't like any of the bids, we can
toss them all.
We can toss them all.
So you personally contacted each of these companies or got those individual quotes?
Most of them were done by Leonard.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. No, I understand your concern, but since this is an informal bid process, we have a lot of latitude, and I don't think there's a concern.
Yeah. All right.
And we do have a formal bid process, correct? By law, we have to. Do we have a resolution or a policy in?
Well, we have a resolution about that gives us procurement guidelines. It tells me when I can just get one quote up to $10,000. We don't need three quotes. Anything over 10, we do. If it's over 20, I got to come to the board for approval of the purchase, either 20 or 25. So we do have our rules. Now, the formal bid process, the way I define it, is what we had to go through with Rupel. It's what you have to go through when a government entity in Oregon is embarking on a project or a job that costs over $100,000. By law, that has to be a formal bid process like what we went through with Rupel. And it's a long, drawn-out, highly regulated process. It's not something I enjoy. Luckily, a purchase for this amount does not qualify for that.
Okay.
And if I'm not mistaken, the board is involved in making this decision regarding the purchase because it exceeds your spending authority. Authority manager for purchasing equipment.
That is correct.
So that's why you're bringing it to the board. Otherwise, you would just make the decision and go ahead.
I would.
Kathy, I appreciate your perspective. I think you're right about late bids, but seeing as how this was informal, how do you feel about that?
That's fine.
Okay.
I mean, I'm all for saving money.
Okay, so we need a motion to rescind last month's bid. And makes that motion.
I can make that motion, and I'll combine the two if that's acceptable to everybody. I'll move that we rescind the motion of August 8th, 2023, to purchase the generator from Platt Electric and approve the purchase of the identical equipment that is presented by Andrew Baker, Market Development Manager of Western U.S.
And that's the factory rep, is that correct?
He's either the Northwest or the West Coast Generac marketing rep.
Okay, of Generac then.
Yeah, Generac.
So the motion is to rescind the prior bid and proceed with the purchase on the less expensive bid for identical equipment.
Okay.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second to rescind last month's generator bid on Platt and to purchase the Generac generator now. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Tom,
yeah.
I have a question.
Okay.
Did John contact all the other people that submitted a bill and would be willing to drop their prices? Was that ever checked?
No, it wasn't, because all the other, we found out that everybody else where we got quotes from would get the generator from this same place anyway.
Okay.
And we're so basically eliminating the middleman.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay, once again, we have a motion on the floor. All those in favor of Ann's motion signify by saying aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Unanimous. Okay. New business. Water, wastewater, master plan adoption. John, can you help us?
Yes. We discovered that in the past with our water and wastewater master plans that they were by motion formally adopted by the board. I my understanding, and we looked, is that that was not done with our two most recent plans, and I wanted to put it on the agenda in case the board was inclined to formally adopt those plans the way that previous boards have done. And it's really a board decision. I just wanted to bring it to the board's attention and see if they wanted to pursue that or not.
And
I think that should be done, and I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay.
My recollection, we had a conversation about this, been a number of months ago now, probably a year ago, but my recollection was that we were wanted to have the public meetings regarding these master plans before.
That's a good point.
We actually adopted, formally adopted.
That's a good point. Yeah, in case the public has any input that we might, may or may not feel like incorporating into the plan, that's something I hadn't even thought about. Sean.
Didn't we have a public hearing?
Not on the master plans. My memory is that we wanted to have a public meeting for the master plan so we could discuss what a master plan is, how they're created, what it looks forward to, how we approach accomplishing the jobs.
What our challenges are.
But not in terms of modifying the plan, which is a highly engineered, carefully designed, researched document. It's not just a question of time, but obviously we've been in these discussions for
how should we proceed?
Well, until we have public meeting, I don't think we need to do anything.
You don't think we should adopt it until we've had that opportunity?
We had a public hearing?
Or public meeting about it.
It's not a hearing.
It's not a hearing.
Yeah, it's a meeting.
Because
we want some other ideas if they're there.
Well, I mean, to Ann's point, I mean, going back and changing anything in those master plans is probably not realistic. But I do. But you know, hey, you never know. I mean, who knows what the public might, you know, have input on. And so I would like to see us not adopt that until we have our public meetings, which we've been talking about for a long time. And I think it's important that to have that, you know, transparency with the public. So,
that's a good idea. I would suggest also that we publish the master plans, both of them, on our website.
Well, did that go to the library?
We can do that too.
Because we have in the past, all that stuff's gone to the library for viewing.
But those documents are approved documents
and
adopted documents. So we public dissemination of something that hasn't been completed would be premature.
Okay.
So maybe the best solution is to put this on hold until we have that public meeting, and then we can put it back on the agenda.
Okay. But I would at least publish it so that the public has access to it, look it over.
Well, I think we have to be careful because these are complete documents. They're no longer marked draft.
That's true.
And the board has been involved, carefully involved in every step along the way, not to mention the time and efforts of John and the whole staff in providing information and research to the engineers. And
so your suggestion is to have the public meeting first?
My personal preference would be to go ahead and approve the master plans and use the public meeting to explain what they are, how they come to be, what it means, how this is future planning, and that would be my personal preference.
To adopt it then, and then adopt it first. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking we ought to show the public first before we adopt it.
I agree.
Okay, we need to have that public meeting.
I know we do. We're making progress though, aren't we?
Now we've got the technology working so we can...
We can at least hear Cameron now. That's a huge improvement.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with doing that. I'm just not sure it's necessary to wait. But I certainly have no problem doing it. And we have all along discussed...
Well, these are 20-year
having
plans.
Having public discussions.
I would think the public would want to know what repairs we have planned out there in the future, including pipelines and you know, other major projects down the road. So they have a basic idea where we're going. I think that's practical. That's transparent. Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, that brings us, if there isn't any more discussion on that, let's move to item B, which is system development.
Mom?
Yes, Cameron?
I've got a question.
Okay.
My phone is showing up the notification that there's two people recording our meeting. Isn't it supposed to be recorded by the plant?
By the plant?
Yeah, it shows on my phone that two people are recording our meetings. That one would be us, I assume, and then somebody else.
Well, I know that I've got the meeting recording on Teams. We've also got another recorder going, but you wouldn't be able to see that on the phone.
Well, then somebody else on their phone is recording. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
I don't think anybody here, and I think the only person attending remotely.
There's no one besides Cameron attending remotely. There's you, Cameron, and myself are the only ones on Teams right now.
Okay, well, it flashed up on my phone, and that's what it says.
Okay.
Two individuals, so anyway.
Oh, we do have somebody waiting in the lobby, though.
Oh, Bob.
Okay.
Sorry, Bob.
Okay. But it wouldn't be him, because you wouldn't have even been able to see that.
Well, he is now no longer in the lobby.
Nope.
Sorry, Bob.
And now it says one. So that's probably it.
Okay.
All right, let's go to item B again. System development charge methodology and rates schedule adoption. The 90 days is up and in some.
Yes, the 90 days expired 2 days after our last meeting, unfortunately, but it did give us the opportunity to have the public hearing that we were required to have on it. We've got that done, and the only thing left to do, if the board is so inclined, would be to adopt the methodology and the calibrated rate structure that was the result of the consultant. These were, of course, as everybody remembers, were supplemental to both our water and our wastewater master plans.
And
I'm prepared to make a motion. I'll move that we approve resolution number 23-07 in the matter of adopting new water and wastewater system development charge methodologies and rates effective September 13th, 2023.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
So let me get this straight. On the adopting our resolution 2307, we're going to hold off or cancel it and then have a public meeting on it?
No,
this is
not the master plan.
This is a separate issue from the master plans. This was just done in conjunction with the master plans, but this is a separate issue.
All right.
So we have a motion and a second.
We already had them.
Pardon me?
She already motioned. I seconded.
Okay.
If we decided to have a policy, we at one point talked about what to do about food carts, would we have to then amend this or do an addition to it if we had an SDC hookup fee for water and sewer for a food cart?
I believe if we created any new categories of SDCs, that they would, at this point going forward, just be handled the way they would always do. That would be an internal resolution that we would approve. But it would not negate the adoption of the SDC methodologies and rate schedules that was done by our consultant.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Opposed? Signify by nay. Carry unanimously. Okay. Item C, Oregon Coast Bank signers. We were notified by Oregon Coast Bank that Director Gogas did not want to become a signer on our bank accounts. So unfortunately, we have to have a motion to take him off the signing list so that they can issue new signing cards.
So everybody has to go on and sign again?
Yes.
Okay.
And
this has been for my term on the board, an automatic and routine function that board members perform. I don't recall anyone ever questioning why, because you're an elected official responsible for the fiscal management of the authority. And so I'm interested in the concept of, as an elected official responsible for the fiscal management, why you would decline to serve that portion of what has traditionally been a responsibility of board members.
Cameron, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. I can answer that. When I was first on the board, I was never a signature. The second term, I was a signature. And now I'm having issues with people hacking into my credit and my banking things. I don't want to have that information any way out there for anybody to get. So that is the reason I do not want to get a signature. I don't want people to have access to be able to get there. So that's my thought process. I just want to safeguard the water and sewer that this doesn't happen, since I've been having issues with this for some time.
I understand.
I can tell you, when we had to sign for TLC, I believe it was. Was it TLC? Who did we have to go up and tell them?
Yeah, TLC.
I was a little bit taken aback by the fact that TLC did an extensive credit check and were asking me questions about, in order to sign the signature card, they were asking me some pretty deeply researched questions that definitely made me uncomfortable. So I was taken aback by that process, for sure. So I can't really fault Cameron for that. I certainly understand that we need to be able to sign for the authority, but I found it a little violating that they did that deep a dive of information and then now have all that information. It was a little unsettling.
Okay, thank you.
So we need to remove Director Gogas and Carolyn McVictor and add Director Staroska, right?
Correct.
So I was already added. I've already been down there and signed.
Oh.
But the signature card that was prepared included Director Gogas. And so it's as if none of that happened. We have to start from the beginning and provide minutes that are approved calling for who exactly ought to be a signer on the account. So
So, John, you're our agent, so you're on the signature card, correct?
I'm always on the signature card, and I will have, I've signed, but I'll have to go back in and re-sign.
That's okay. Wanted to clarify that.
Okay. All right, well, then I move that we remove Director Gogas and Director McVictor from the Oregon Coast Bank Account signature card and add Director Staroska.
Okay.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed signify by saying nay. Did you have a vote, Kat?
No votes.
Oh, you okay? It's unanimous. I missed it.
Oh, okay. My hand is
so just to clarify the result of this motion, the signers going forward, and we will need to, when these minutes are approved, the bank will prepare a new signature card. And the signers will be
Kathy, John, you, and Sean.
And Raquel will let us know when that's been done so we can go down to the bank.
Yes, Rochelle will let us know. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Motion carried. Okay, item 8D, Delta, Pacific City Joint Water Sewer Authority, Sanitary Authority, public meeting goals. John, you started this, I believe, last month. Would you?
Yeah, I can elaborate. As you all know, I asked for another extension of time before our next public meeting. Feeling a little uncomfortable that we just weren't quite ready. Not just with my knowledge of, you know, some of the AV equipment that we've all been looking forward to. Tom, I know you were talking about doing something similar in our conference room a year ago. And that, and I wanted a little more time to see if I could come up with some creative ways to get the word out about our meetings. I contacted Tim at the PC Sun as an option. It's come to my attention that KCC has a Facebook page that they're happy to help advertise our meetings for. I believe that if our goal, and let me just ask, is our goal that we want public participation at our meetings?
Absolutely.
And if so, is there a limit to how much participation we would be comfortable with? I mean, the reason I ask is because if our goal is public participation, I believe there's two keys. And this is coming off the Rupel meeting that I have still traumatized me after all these months. I want to be sure we put our best foot forward at these public meetings. I want to be sure that we do a good job of getting the word out and coming up with creative ways to do that. I think that's key number one to public participation. But in this day and age, I think key number two to public participation is we need to give people the option to join our meetings from home, remotely. And so the question is okay, how do we go about these things? I've already, as I say, identified some. We'll use all our tried and true methods for advertising these meetings, but I want to branch out. I want to do some more. I want to go beyond what we typically do to advertise for a meeting like this. But secondly, I want to be sure that we can offer the public a remote attendance option, virtual, through Teams, through Zoom, whatever we decide to do. And I guess let me ask the board this. Is there a desire to have the general public attend our meetings remotely?
I think that the public should have the option of doing that.
Okay.
I would point out, that under public meeting law, that in our meeting minutes, we must record who attended. So we need a way to know who attends our meetings, and that's in the public meeting law. That was the Attorney General has a set of rules that they've published, and that specifically was something that was in there. So if we do something like what we're doing today with Teams, we need to have some knowledge about how Teams works and how we can include as many people as possible, but we need to make a way to identify that person, even if I'm not sure how the rules go, if it's just a single name or your full name, because even at our old meetings we used to have a sign-in sheet. But there was a reason for that, and I researched it, and in public meeting law you have to have someone in who attends in the minutes.
Well, and if you have three people attending online, that's not an issue. If you've got 300, then that becomes an issue.
Well, then we can record. We need to find out if Teams. I know you can record a meeting on Teams, but we need to find out whether they record the attendees also.
Well, and Teams' ability to even see who the attendees are depends on what method they use to join. For example, if people just called in, I mean, one of the options is to give people just the option to call in. There's a number that never changes. There's a passcode that changes with every meeting. So as long as people know the phone number and have the current passcode, they can attend the meeting. They'll only be able to obviously attend it by audio. They would not have any video. But from my experience with Teams, when people join the meeting that way, all you see is a phone number. You don't see a name. Mm-hmm. So if the reason we see names here is because each and every one of these people received an invitation to this meeting. And it is an option to send out a mass email to all our customers that we have emails on record, and to send them a personal invitation. That becomes a bit of a challenge in that, well, first you have to compile the list. After that, supposedly it's just cut and paste. But maintaining that list is the headache, because people move in, move out, customers, come and go.
Unsubscribe, yeah.
So that is an option as well. I think the preferred option, and I need to test this because I'm not sure what we're going to see from the participants list on Teams if we do it this way. Every Teams meeting has a unique URL. It's not the type of thing that we can put on a meeting notice and tack it to a telephone pole or put it up in a general bulletin board, because these URLs are like 300 characters long. So what you need is you need a link and a hyperlink to that URL. And how the best way to do that is, before every meeting, we put the hyperlink on our website. But what I don't know is, when they join via that hyperlink, I don't know if everybody's name is recorded. I don't know how the participant list is going to come through, and that's one thing I want to test.
Well, I suggest that we have the board, if they decide to, but some of our admin staff, you for absolute sure, get some training in Teams. Some professional training. Mm-hmm. There is a company in Salem and in Portland as you know, I used to work for the Oregon Lottery, and I attended a lot of these professional Microsoft trainings. And they're not real expensive, but they are usually a one-day training, and they're very in-depth. So I suggest we arrange for some training for staff and for board members, if they so desire.
And we will pursue that for sure. I, if you, If I knew this program better, I could probably do some amazing things at these public meetings, right? But I think in general, just philosophically, I think the best solution is the hyperlink on the website. Now, you know, of course, you know, every one of these options has their pros and cons. The downside, you know, the upside to the hyperlink is that people who own properties here but don't live here can join our meeting.
I like that idea.
That's a good idea. The downside is anybody in the world can join our meeting, including people, you know, well beyond our customer base. Not that they would, but it does open the window to the entire world. As they can access a meeting just by logging into our website.
This is why when we went into the period of the pandemic, we did everything we could to notify people if they wanted to attend the meeting to call the office, and then we would get their email and send them the link.
And send them the link.
And
yes.
So to avoid that, you know, once it's on the internet, it's all over the whole globe, kind of concept, and also to make sure that people understood what it was they were joining. And the other thing I was going to mention in relation to if you call in, like on your cell phone or something, and it just shows the telephone number, a lot of meetings are done this way, and you simply take a few minutes at the beginning of the meeting to identify, to say if you called in and the last four digits of your number are 7732, can you identify yourself, please?
That is possible.
And that's how you put them on the guest list.
Yes, and you know, hopefully not too many, because that could be
a... serves the same purpose as a sign-in sheet.
Well, under public meeting laws, possibly, there is a section on a new section I noticed on visual and audio meetings, and I think it was added during the pandemic time, that reflects... Now, I could be wrong here. It might take some legal checking. But to use a telephone number as an identifier. But it would take a legal finding. But I think it kind of referred or inferred that. It wasn't, I don't think it was specific. But it might be also something to pursue.
Yeah, and kind of in line with your training, a suggestion, Tom. You know, when you have people, the general public, joining your meetings virtually, you don't have a whole lot of control. Meaning, if they don't mute their lines, you got dogs barking in the background, you got people carrying on conversations. Now, there is a way, as the host, that I can silence everybody's microphone. The only problem is I don't know how to silence everybody's microphone without also silencing all the board members' microphones. And that's another problem that we have to somehow figure out a solution for. Because what I would do is if we started getting substantial attendance remotely to our meetings, is I would silence their microphones until we got to the guest questions and comments section. And then I would open it up. But again, if I don't know how to silence everybody else's microphones except for the board. And so that's something that Teams training might reveal. But that's an obstacle that we got to find a solution for. So but I wanted to just kind of have this general discussion because, you know, I've heard from all the board members about what our hopes are for these meetings and what our goals are for these meetings. I just wanted to have this discussion so that I could narrow my path to try to get us there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
yep.
I got one more comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would just throw some caution out there in regards to a goal of having public participation. You know, in my mind, the goal is to encourage public participation and to encourage transparency. But I don't want to get to a situation where our goal is public participation and no one shows up, and now we failed at our goal.
Got it.
So I want to make
sure. Which might happen.
which might happen. So I want to make sure that our goal isn't that we need a certain number of people here. Our goal is to do everything that we can to get public participation.
Yes.
But again, as with happened with the Rubel meeting, I kind of take it as if no one shows up, then no one's got a complaint. Yeah. So everybody's happy, so I take it as a good thing. So I just want to be cautious about that.
That's a good point. But I think we have established that we would like to encourage public participation. I think we have established that we would like to pursue virtual option as one way to get there. Mm-hmm. And that was really all I wanted to just to nail down at this meeting before I move in that direction. I just wanted the board just to clarify, not only what their hopes or potential goals were for our meetings, but also trying to narrow down our options, our preferred options for how to get there. So,
okay. We'll see him ahead.
So this was very helpful. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to 8E, ECHO, Old and Obsolete Equipment Disposal, a.k.a. Old Tools. This was in... came up as a request from Director Gogas. I went through, for your own information, Cameron, I went through all the resolutions I could lay my hands on, and to the best of my knowledge, we really don't have a policy on how to dispose of equipment, but there are some general guidelines, and John has included what the state of Oregon does on these kind of things. The basic problem with disposing of equipment is the time it takes to dispose of it. John makes X amount of dollars an hour. Our administrative and technical staff makes have certain wages, and the time it takes to prepare it and sell it is sometimes cost more than the dang thing is worth.
Tom, the reason I brought that up before anybody, and I think it's way before even Leonard was there, when I first came down here, moved back down here, that they had a public sale, because it is public property, even if you deem it non-sellable or non-costly or whatever. And I don't know if Ann would remember that, but they had a public auction or a sale of all the equipment that was obsolete and that people bid on it, and that everyone got the opportunity to bid on it, that it just didn't get to one person. And what I object to is that it just went to one group. There's several people that I've heard from that would have liked the opportunity. So I would like to say that we have a policy or something. If we're going to do that, that we have a cleanup of everything, if you want to do it quarterly, yearly, whatever, that it's done to the public of everyone, not just a few individuals that just, by the way, heard about it.
Okay, well, this is about the cleanup of one of our sheds of old stuff. So, John, would you tell me exactly what happened, please, with these tools?
Well, Leonard oversaw it. If it's all right, Tom, I can. Leonard would like to speak.
Okay,
to this.
Go ahead.
We're cleaning up the tool room, which is also a dressing room. We just don't have the room anymore. There's stuff that was there, like Cameron said, before I was there. Stuff that hasn't been used in 20 plus years. All rusty. Not some of the stuff was. Equipment that had batteries left in it, so the stuff that held it wasn't good. It just was stuff that if somebody wanted to spend the time to clean it up, maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. So I made a phone call to somebody that had borrowed stuff from us that was the same thing they had borrowed, just an older piece of equipment. I said, if you want it, come get it.
What was it worth?
couldn't tell you. I have no idea. It was a, maybe there was an antique value. I don't know. It was old. It wasn't like I was trying to sneak something under the bridge or keep people out or anything like that. We didn't need it. We wanted it gone.
Well, I think in general, we need to give, and I was involved in this too. Leonard headed the cleanup, but in general, we need to allow the authority manager to use some common sense and some discretion to determine what something is roughly worth if it has any value at all. Because one reason that we had stuff stacking up in there, old, antiquated stuff, some stuff didn't work, some stuff was unsafe to use. It is so old and antiquated. I believe it's important that somebody like me has some discretion in this matter. Because if we don't, this will get bogged down in this, and I'll tell you what, a better option for me, and I think a cheaper option for me, would be to rent a storage unit and just put our old stuff in there and let it just sit. Because this disposal, you know, we're a government entity, we get that, and we have to be careful about this stuff. But I can look at a piece of equipment. I've been in this business a long time. I've seen this equipment. I've used this similar equipment. I have a pretty good idea if something is in functional condition or not, and a pretty good idea of what something is worth. And I, you know, a lot of stuff we just tossed out. And there was a couple of small items that we felt had some, maybe still had some value, not to us, but maybe to somebody. And we donated those to some local folks, local government entities, water and wastewater districts. One thing we donated to the Industrial Arts Department at Tillamook Community College, because I would rather do that than throw it away. But I think it's important, and we should develop an internal policy and define what this is. But I just think it's important for somebody like me to have some discretion, to use his common sense, to make sound fiscal decisions about how to dispose of this stuff.
Well, John, I don't have a problem with that, but I think that everybody should have the opportunity to have a chance at it, and that wasn't given.
Well, we probably need to.
I would have liked to have that chance to do that. The one that Tony had, he had a lot of stuff. And a majority of the stuff went to Redicops. That's when Redicop was doing the hit instead of Rucks. A lot of it went there. But it should be the opportunity to everybody, because the public paid for that.
Yeah.
Not just one person. Everybody. That's public property. So,
Kathy, do you have a comment?
Some policy that we wrote up, that this is what we do in the future. Made a mistake, let's move on.
Kathy, you have a comment?
I didn't make a mistake.
So I'm really happy to see that John and Leonard are working together, that some of this is going to other entities. You know, Water District, Community College, I think that's great. I am totally in support of recycling things and reusing things and not throwing them away. I think if we go into every time they want to get rid of it, we have to set up this whole process to let everybody bid or whatever. John is a busy person. Leonard is a busy person. The rest of the staff are busy people. It's not my desire that they are spending their time setting up that kind of event. Now, maybe if they have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and once every 5 years, they have a big event to get rid of that, maybe so. But I totally trust John to decide that this is something they don't need, doesn't have a whole lot of value, and this is a good place for it to go to.
Well, what I I'm thinking is that Cameron does bring up a good point about it's public property. So possibly along the lines of Oregon's guidelines for disposition of surplus or old things, we need to come up with a general policy for something like, let's say, anything that's worth less than $500, John has, or $1,000, John has the authority to do with it as he pleases. Your point about, you know, every 4 or 5 years, we don't have that much junk laying around, but we just have, what was it, just one corner in the shed full of stuff?
Basically.
And it needs to, you know, you need to clean it up and you know, it's just general housekeeping and common sense here. But I think it's practical that we have a general resolution or policy denoting, giving John a threshold when he needs to come to the board to dispose of something and when he doesn't. Just something simple. Like, for example, we have this new generator, or that old generator, that old antique, that might have some antique value.
That's something
but,
we would...
You know, that might be like with the last truck we sold and put it out front and say, you know, sealed bid.
Yeah.
It runs maybe sometimes.
Out. Yeah, yeah, that's...
So,
that,
I tow it out every day with the sign on it, just like we do the vehicles.
Yeah.
And everything else. That's a huge item compared to what we deal with.
And that takes a motion of the board to declare it.
Surplus.
What's the term? Surplus material available for sale.
Well, there should be a value.
And that's a value question. It's,
yeah. There should be a value unit.
Okay, but, well...
everybody has a different opinion about value. You know, I think a loaf of bread should be $2, and they're charging $5.
Yeah, good luck there. And
I just like to say that I'm in agreement with Kathy. I think that we're in danger of getting close to micromanaging. And
this
the whole point here is that we've hired a highly experienced professional person to be the authority manager. And I think one of the principal roles of a board member is just get out of the way and let him operate.
John,
and
would you be so kind
very,
to...
excuse me, I'm not quite finished. He has a very experienced staff that he works well with. And I don't think that it's appropriate for the board to enter into micromanaging these kinds of issues. So to me, it ain't broke. Let's don't fix it.
Okay. I still like the idea of a general resolution to and a limit that you don't need to come to the board with every 5 minutes for every little thing.
No, and that's what I wasn't asking for, Tom. I said if you do it quarterly or yearly or whenever. When you got a big accumulation of stuff, you know, it's like the stuff like Leonard said, piling up in the corner and it's like taking space, you know. We all have that in our house, all cluttered. But the thing about it is, it's public property. Public. They paid for it.
And,
we didn't.
And unless it's junk.
Right.
And it's not,
well, it's not
public,
worth
it's
the
public
time and
junk.
To talk about it.
That's right, it's public junk.
Okay, let's table this discussion for now. Maybe come up with something in the next month or two and figure out something different here. This is, like you say, micromanaging.
My personal opinion is I don't think we need to address this again.
I don't
I think
I
this
don't
is I think this is
I think
ridiculous. I think that the authority manager ought to have the authority to declare something a piece of crap and get rid of it, and I don't think the board should waste any more time on this.
I agree.
That's my
Amen.
Opinion.
Me too.
Okay, works for me. Okay, are there any other questions or comments from guests? Did you have any mails or emails, John?
None at all.
Nothing from anyone present. So chair or director comments?
Yeah, I do.
Figures.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm really appalled that we are talking about an incident that happened. Why don't we give the same regard to directors if we're going to grill them in front of a public meeting? Why don't we have a recess or executive session instead of having a grilling session in a public meeting?
Because we can't have an executive session except under certain circumstances, and as we are here discussing John's annual review. Executive sessions are specifically under law, public meeting law, related to personnel problems or personnel discussions that are private.
Or legal issues. There are statutes.
And legal issues also. That's correct.
Anyway, that's my comment. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right, if there is... we do have a problem here, Cameron. When we recess here for executive session to discuss John's annual review, Teams is going to not record, and we're going to basically turn it off. We can't get back in once the meeting is closed. So I have my personal telephone here. Do you have my phone number, I believe. So when we go into executive session, would you call my personal number and I'll put it on speakerphone?
Sure.
Okay, this meeting is adjourned for executive session.
Recess
for executive session. All right. This is a Board of Directors business meeting. It's now reconvened at 7:23.
7:16 I've got.
Yeah, me too.
You're right, 7:15, this watch is a little slow. And you have a comment.
I have a motion
a
to
motion.
Make.
A motion, all right.
I move that as a result of the review of the authority manager, that the authority manager's salary be increased by 5%, and that these changes be made retroactively to his anniversary date.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. This is the recorder's on, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Cameron?
Nay.
And one nay. Okay. So that's on the recorder. Good. All right. There's no other business. This meeting is adjourned.
At 7:17 p.m.
Yes, 7:17. Thank you, Cameron.
Congratulations.